Okay, our next case for argument, United States versus Steinfest. Mr. Marsh.
Good afternoon. I'm Gareth Morris on behalf of Corey Steinfest, counsel. Right before the judge was to impose sentence, the prosecutor reminded the judge to forget what she should never have heard. The prosecutor said you should disregard, for instance, quote, for instance.
And she said she was disregarding it. So what's the problem?
The problem is that it was after a written, 14 months earlier, written objections to any...
You think Judge St. Eve is incapable of not giving weight to the information, the Goldstein report?
I think this was the most...
No, yes or no?
No, she's not incapable of it, but I don't think she did here. I think what happened here is that it had a substantial...
She wasn't going to consider it. So you think she considered it anyway?
I think there are strong indications that she did. For example, the only comment she makes on the psychological report is that she understands that he suffered from 2 years of abuse, and then he should have understood not to turn to, and she uses these words, to turn to exploiting children. But the implication that the turning to suggests that having been physically abused, he turned to abuse. There are undercurrents.
There's lots of evidence in the record about that. There's his poor mother's letter, and there's other evidence. There's evidence of his record. I think whatever the hook may be, and it's a very high sentence, I understand that, Judge St. Eve undoubtedly reviewed the record before she went out for the sentencing. She promises she's not going to take the Goldstein report into account. We rely on such representations every day in the system. I don't think there's any reason to think she can't put it to one side. There's lots of other evidence in this record about Mr. Steinfest.
None about that he... that
the defendants constantly bring up early abuse. It doesn't have to be sexual, whatever. Early abuse as a mitigating factor.
But here the government brings up, in violation of the Fifth Amendment, that he has, and he's been forced to...
We're talking about Judge St. Eve.
She simply doesn't discuss or address not just the fact that he's been abused for 2 years, but Dr. Merrick's report, and the whole defense argument, which was that since 2000, when he'd had these misdemeanor offenses, he had not been in contact with any children. There had been no touching. That he was a voyeur, as the doctor said, that he had all kinds of problems that preoccupied him with looking at child pornography.
He's not being punished on the basis that he had physical contact with children.
I think that that there is the appearance that he was in this case. There needs to be, as the case the Gold Court said, you need to promote the perception of fair sentencing. Here the opposite occurs. The judge is reminded that supposedly there had to be reports to DCFS that he was a child molester. No evidence or basis for that whatsoever. And secondly, there's no comment on the whole defense argument of how damaged he was, the way in which he was molested, and the doctor's report show that he was dealing with his problems and looking at child pornography.
Dealing with his problems?
Yes, in the sense...
Look, he's 30 now, or 31. He has an extraordinary record of the child pornographic stuff, an enormous collection. And he's an intelligent person, and he's comfortable with technology and fancy cameras and stuff like this. Really an overwhelming case. And, you know, the problem you face in these cases is when you're dealing with people who are compulsive. And
Judge, I agree. I agree with all that you said.
Right?
I'm sorry.
They're incorrigible. What is it to drive someone to collect 190,000 images of children? I don't get that.
Well, I think the number's sort of deceptive because, as you know, images are transferred with the click of a mouse. The numbers mean very little.
Well, who wants to have 190,000 images of anything?
I agree with you. And I think the answer is that this is, and in fact all the government's evidence of how he behaved is evidence of his illness, of the damage that was done to him.
The problem is it's also evidence of a compulsion that requires a very long sentence for a young person, right? Because if he were 70 or something, well, you'd say he's on a down swing in terms of sexual activities, and so, you know, a 5-year sentence or something is adequate. But for someone who's only 30, give him a short sentence, he's going to be out, and, you know, supervised release may pen him in to some extent, but...
Well, he received lifetime supervised release, and, for the period from 2000, and this was our central argument, when he pulls down this poor little kid's swimsuit, and this is the sense in which I mean he contained himself, he restricted himself to looking, and that's a less serious offense, we would all agree. And the central issue in these cases is he a looker or is he a toucher or a doer?
I'm not sure how less serious it is, because it's not looking at child pornography that's really the problem. The problem is that it creates a market for the production of this stuff. And a lot of this stuff involves very serious abuse of children, and the people who are providing the market for this, they are accomplices in this child abuse, as they well know.
Well, and I understand that, and I don't disagree with that at all, Your Honor. The judge simply never addresses the argument that his problems, and it's just like the Vidal case involving the same judge, that there simply was no discussion of why he was looking. What caused it? The mitigating argument that what had happened to him and the psychological evidence simply isn't discussed. So the court's left to guess on how to factor that into the sentence and how to review the sentence for reasonableness. And there's simply nothing in the record to help you with that. And on top of it, you have, and I see my time is up, the direct violation of his Fifth Amendment rights.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Morris. Ms. Tracy?
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Tiffany Tracy and I represent the United States. The district court explicitly addressed and adequately considered each of the defendant's arguments in mitigation and set forth its reasons for rejecting those arguments. The government's remarks regarding the defendant's psychological examination were proper and neither prejudiced the defendant nor impacted his sentence. And finally, the district court's above-guideline sentence was reasonable in light of the particularized circumstances of this case. The district court did reject each and every one of the arguments of mitigation that the defendant presented, and the record below supports that. The district court rejected the defendant's argument that his expressive language disorder, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress disorder made him particularly vulnerable to his co-defendant Garcia's request to distribute child pornography.
I don't think that what the government said was appropriate. Months and months ago, there was discussion held on the record regarding a psychosexual evaluation of Steinfest. The court is fully capable of hearing some things and considering them and deciding not to consider them. Remember what you heard? You're capable of not considering them. I don't think that was appropriate. You're reminding her of that. I don't think it had any effect on Judge St. Eve. You know, he's disciplined and very able judge. But I don't think the government should have brought that up.
Your Honor, the record shows that the government did state that at the conclusion of the sentencing presentation. And what's important to note is that no time the government suggested the court consider the defendant's statements or rely on them. But in light of the record in the months before, the government felt that it was necessary to make sure that this court was not left to speculate on the district court's reasons for imposing the sentence it did. So,
but there's a positive way to achieve that, and there's a, you know, here's this bad stuff, and I'm going to remind you in a not very subtle way of it. He had made his arguments. He'd made his arguments about the past abuse. He'd made his arguments that looking, you know, it's at least an argument, whether you agree with it or not, looking isn't as serious as this poor kid who has these ongoing psychological problems from the touching incident, and so on. So you make sure you get the reasoning on the record. You don't have to dredge up Dr. Goldstein implicitly.
But here, what's important to note, as this court has already said, is that the district court did not rely on the statements either made before the sentencing hearing or during the sentencing hearing.
Yeah, I mean, lucky for you, she didn't. I mean, I think that's the risk.
And going beyond that, the district court made a specific finding in her statement of reasons that there was absolutely no evidence before the district court that the defendant had, since April 26, 2000, committed a contact offense. So she went beyond saying, I haven't considered it. She went further and said, there's no evidence before me that the defendant in this case committed a contact offense after the April 26, 2000 offense. So here the court is not left to speculate what the district court did here. The district court gave its reasons for imposing the sentence it did, and any comments at all regarding Dr. Goldstein's report was not one of them. Your Honors,
and just to go back, when she originally looked at the report and said it wasn't going to be considered, that the order was reduced to writing, right?
I believe, Your Honor, that there is a notation. Yes, it is. There is a notation in the record that not only did she address this, albeit a bit more detailed orally, but there was a follow-up note in the record that she was granting in part and denying in part the defendant's motion.
You know, there's
my point. If that was spelled out in the record, you had a record for the Court of Appeals.
Yes.
You know, so this need to feel like you needed to bring it out, that's my point. And if the judge isn't clear enough at the time, then you can always say to the court, can you issue a minute order for purposes of the record? The point is, she did deny and grant in part, and that was sufficient. That's the point I wanted to make.
See, there's never a case, probably, in which the judge has not heard some evidence that the jury hasn't heard and has ruled inadmissible. And can you imagine a situation in which every case the government says, oh, by the way, judge, we hope you're not going to consider any inadmissible evidence which you might have heard? Now, that would be ridiculous. But that's what this is.
Your Honor, yes, that was said at the conclusion of the sentencing. But what's important, again, to note is that here there was no harm or no prejudice to the defendant because...
But it shouldn't have been said.
In light of the record before...
I mean, the problem is the government pushes too hard. And it makes the judges suspicious. Now, this is probably innocent. But as there was no need for it, and as it can be interpreted as trying to remind the judge of something that might influence the judge's thinking, it bothers us.
Here, Your Honor, I think the record does reflect that the government, what it said at any point in time, given the lengthy discussions that were had months before and certainly the very minimal discussion that was had at the sentencing hearing, the government said as little as possible throughout these proceedings regarding the psychological
examination. But what Judge Posner is saying is, if it was adequately dealt with before and there was a record, there's no reason to bring it up. Because then I understand what your interpretation is. You're trying to make sure the record is absolutely clear. But one could have another view, that there could be an ulterior motive for raising this. And what he's saying is there's not a need to raise that ulterior motive. You get that, right?
Yes, Your
Honor.
You
don't want to put an ulterior motive in the record in terms of why the government is doing things, correct?
Absolutely, Your
Okay,
Honor,
that's
I agree.
His point.
Of course. I see that I'm out of time. I'll end by asking this court to affirm the sentence of the defendant.
Okay. And Mr. Morris, you were appointed, were you not?
I was, Your Honor.
Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of the committee.